Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Pit Pod from audiotu.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 77 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audiotu.com. With me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Shelton Muller. How are you?
G'day, mate. I'm pretty good. Bit tired this week, as you and I were.
Tell me about it.
But a lot on this week. You know,
absolutely.
And tomorrow I've got a shoot in the morning, and then I've got to leave straight from the shoot to the airport and fly to South Australia.
Right.
And photograph a wedding over there. So.
Did you have a hard life?
Oh, well, look, it's a bit of fun.
Excellent.
And then, you know, back and straight into it next week. I'm getting the next issue of Total Image up and ready, and that should be another interesting issue. But, you know, it's always hard to do, hard to get done.
I've got to say, it is a blessed life for guys like you and I who get paid to do things that we love.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. It is true.
Because I still feel like that. Even after 20 years, I still love audio engineering to the point where I do it in my spare time.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I never cease to be amazed that there are people who'll be quite happy to pay me to do it.
Yes.
You know, and it sounds like you're much the same. With photography.
Yeah, look, it is true. I mean, yeah, I'm flying to South Australia and I'm shooting a wedding. And, you know, I flew to Canada, as everyone would know, in October to shoot a wedding. And that was really great. You can't knock it. I mean, there's these movies that make the life of a photographer appear rather glamorous. You know, like there's the famous Blow Up
in
the late 60s that basically made it look like all photographers ever do is, you know, find beautiful women, get their clothes off, and after photographing them, make love to them in the studio. And then tell them where to go. I haven't done that.
At least not that you'll admit on a podcast.
I do have a heck of a lot of fun with my camera. And it is true. You know, sometimes, you do need to remind yourself, hey, you know, don't complain, man. This is, you know, there are people who drive taxis and stuff, which is, you know, that's fine, but I'm sure it's nowhere near as much fun.
Yeah.
That was more my point.
Was just that, you know, there are so many people who are stuck in jobs that they don't like.
Yes.
And there are guys like you and I who just seem to have been fortunate enough to find a career in something that we absolutely love doing.
True. Although, as the old saying goes, the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yes.
We chose this and we made it happen. And I'd just like to basically say that to everyone. I mean, I'm certainly not the world's best photographer and I'm certainly not the world's most knowledgeable, but I've worked long and hard to make it possible for me to earn a living from my photography. And really, that's what it boils down to. I remember, when I first picked up an SLR and said, this is what I want to do. I'd love to be a photographer. I'd love to be paid to take pictures. Yeah. And I was only 16 or 17 at the time. And now that I'm 44, you know, I've spent, you know, the last, say, 20 years at least working on the fact that I want to live taking pictures or being, you know, within the photo industry with the many hats that I wear. So if you're a listener and you think to yourself, gee, I'd love to do what, you know, Shelton and Bruce do, you know, or particularly say what Shelton does, because I love photography and would like to make a living from it. It's not impossible. Certainly, you have to be, you know, a capable photographer. The other skills that you would require would naturally be, you know, if you have a good business sense, that's good. I'm still learning mine. Certainly didn't start out with one, and it's, you know, it's something you acquire, but you learn. But the other thing, of course, is, you know, people skills, because a lot of the work that we do as photographers, you know, requires a certain amount of people skills. And I was speaking with a couple the other day. I went over to their home to discuss their wedding, and they were looking at me to photograph their wedding. And I was talking to them about horror stories that I hear about photographers on weddings, particularly, who are devoid of personality, or they just have the wrong personality. And I hear this time and time again. And it ruins the day for the bride and groom because they spend hours with this person and either he's arrogant or he's difficult or he's quiet, he's not much fun. And that kind of thing is difficult for a bride and groom.
He had a big night on the Terps last night and he's hungover.
Who knows? Who knows? But unfortunately, there is a culture among photographers or some photographers to some degree whereby, you know, I'm the photographer, you know, please make way. And that is simply wrong. It is a wrong culture and it doesn't do you well in terms of, you know, your reputation and the reputation of the industry. You know, if I turn up on a wedding and a couple have asked me to photograph their wedding, that it is their day and I am their employee. No matter who I might be or how capable I might be, it is irrelevant because it's their day, it's their one day, and my job is to not only take good photographs, but to try and make that fun. So as a professional photographer, your skills are more than just, can I take a good picture? There's a whole bunch of skills underlying all of that that will, you know, make it possible for you to earn a living from your photography.
A lot of PR skills.
PR skills, absolutely. Most, let's face it, as a professional photographer, the thing that I do the least is take pictures.
For sure.
The thing, I was on a shoot this morning and I'll be on a shoot tomorrow morning. The shoot this morning was 3 hours. Tomorrow morning it'll be the same, another 3 hours. And all I'm doing is photographing a convention, a seminar that's taking place. So I'm photographing keynote speakers and, you know, groups of people. It's pretty easy. Certainly no great skill is required there other than a bit of spot metering, you know, but what is required is, you know, people skills, discretion if you're, you know, in a public place, and also a certain amount of marketing ability and relationship building ability. That's what I do the most. And the thing that I do the least, as I said, is actually take photographs. So if this is your idea of what you want to do for a living, well, naturally, as I've said, photography skills are one thing, but all those other skills are very important. And then, of course, the tenacity to basically say, I'm prepared to starve for as long as it takes, or drive a taxi at night if I have to, or whatever I have to do to make this happen for me, because you're not going to be, you know, walking along the street with your camera and some magazine editor come up and say to you, hello, hey, are you a photographer? Well, come and work for me. That just doesn't happen.
No.
You know, so you've got to push it and you've got to find your you know, method of operation, your arena in which to operate, and then you've got to continue to pursue it.
I think it's worth doing. It's the passion that gets you there.
Absolutely.
Because it's the passion that won't let you stop.
Yep. It's absolutely true. And that passion rubs off. It is onto your clients. If you're on a shoot and you're really passionate and you're working, the client sees that. It results in great photographs. It results in, you know, you're continuing the relationship. If you're passionate about what you do at a wedding, and all the couple is enjoying is the fact that they know that you're doing all you can to make their wedding work, and that's a great comfort to them. And all they can do is not only go, hey, here's your check, which is always good, but is recommend you to every other couple they know who's getting married. And let's face it, if you're working in a demographic of people in a certain age group, in a certain time in their life who are getting married, they have friends and relatives who are getting married. I, for one, don't advertise my wedding photography other than I have a website, but most of my work, if not all of it, pretty well comes from word of mouth.
Corporate.
Yep. Or comes from corporate or other relationships that I've established. Mm. So it is really about establishing, and this is how it worked for me. I was introduced when I started freelancing to an editor of a magazine. I worked, you know, by a friend who was, you know, a friend of mine and a friend of his. He introduced me to him and we became friends. And then I networked, you know, if I photographed for a client of the magazine, I then got to know the client. And when they needed a commercial job done, they'd already worked with me, having given me their products to work with for the magazine, then they had a relationship with me. That then, as they moved from company to company, they would take me with them. And, you know, you lose a few along the way because people change what they do, or they retire, or, you know, you stuff up a job and you lose a customer. But, you know, these things happen. But that is really what it's all about, you know, building one relationship at a time and working your way into the lives of these people. I often get calls from companies saying, you know, look, you were recommended to us. We don't know who to get. You know, we don't know who we're going to hire. We just need a photographer. And you were recommended to us. And I think to myself, look, the Yellow Pages is full of photographers. Why didn't you just go to the Yellow Pages? Well, I know why. It's because they're not comfortable ringing up a stranger and asking them to do something that really they'd rather be confident knowing that the person can do. You know, it's not like ringing up a plumber. Not that I have anything against plumbers, but, you know, that's a difficult task. But photography is something personal and different and requires, a different kind of skill you'd rather have personally recommended. So it's relationship building. That's how you start off doing what you want to do if you want to work as a photographer. Be a good relationship builder and a good photographer, and it will work for you.
Absolutely.
But that really isn't what we're here to talk about, is it, Bruce?
It wasn't. Consider that a bonus topic.
It's bonus material. But, you know, I hope it helps, because I do get emails, and I know that a lot of you listening would love to earn some money from your photography, if not full-time, then at least part-time. That's how you do it, basically. It really is that simple. There's a couple of emails that I wanted to refer to. Mm-hmm. The first one is called Great Show! 3! From Tsi Yung Tam. I hope I've pronounced your name correctly. And it says, Hi Shelton and Bruce. First of all, let me say what a great podcast both of you are hosting. We know, but thank you for telling us. I found out about it weeks ago, and I've been hooked on it ever since. It has helped me a lot with my learning process. I hope the podcast will go on forever. Well, I'm a young man. We're doing our best. We'll eat healthy, and we'll jog a lot, and, you know, we'll try and keep this thing going. Can you see it now, Bruce, you and me?
Well, mate. Yeah, cameras have come a long way the last
40 years.
In my day, we had those digital things. You know, what? Oh, they were tough.
This new holographic rubbish. Yeah.
You just have to think about it. Now she comes, this image. Oh, in my day, we had to carry a camera around.
Yes, but we will do as much as we can to keep the podcast going on forever. Just a few questions. You ask us about the changing your camera system from an EOS 350D with your 18-55 and your 75-300. That's your kit. And then our Tsi Yung goes on to say, I take photographs of everything. Although I'm very keen in taking landscape photos, I'd like to improve my skills in other forms of photography. I'm thinking of upgrading to an EOS 5D with the following lenses. And he lists them, the 85 1.8, the 24 70-28, and the 70-200 f4 Canon, the USM lenses. I know it's a big step up, but I just want to have a good single upgrade instead of spending more money and doing it in stages. What's your opinion? How would an amateur like me know when it's time to upgrade my kit? Do you think I've got a complete package that enables me to do any form of photography or photograph any objects in any conditions? Would it be worthwhile to get the, and he goes on, the f2.8 instead of the f4? Would my pictures turn out better? And that's basically the gist of your email. And look, let me just answer. It's a very difficult one to answer. First of all, there is nothing wrong with the EOS 350D and your kit, you know, the 18-55 and the 75-300. There's very little you couldn't photograph with that. And I've seen images from the 350D. I'm not a fan of the camera. I'm not a fan of, not because I don't like Canon. Canon make great cameras. It's just for me personally, I find those cameras a little lightweight and my hands just don't, you know, fit round them.
Tell the truth. You're a Nikon junkie.
I am a Nikon junkie, but there is something. Look, I love the upper range Canons, the 5D and the 1D are just absolutely fabulous. But see, they're bigger, and I've always liked bigger cameras. I've used the 350D and the 30D and the 400D. I've used them, and they produce excellent images. But for me personally, they just don't feel comfortable in my hand. And we've spoken many times about how if you buy a camera, it has to be friendly to you. You've got to like picking it up. It's got to feel good. And I think that's important. So for me personally, I'm not a fan. I wouldn't buy one. But it's not because there's anything wrong with the camera, but it's because the camera and I aren't compatible. And that's it's as simple as that. You know, I it's just like, you know, not just because a woman is beautiful, it doesn't mean you want to marry her. You know, you're not compatible. Somebody else will get her, but no, she's just not for me. And that's what it's like with me and the smaller EOSs. However, what you really asked is, will that make your pictures better? And I can't answer that. I really can't, because it would be easy for me to say, no, it's not the camera that takes the pictures, it's you. But of course, we do know that our tools of the trade are very important. The lenses that you've suggested, Which would, of course, be better with the 5D, are the 85, the 2470, and the 70-200. Now, you've got to remember that as you go from the 350D to the EOS 5D, you're going from an APS-C size sensor to a 35mm size frame sensor. So all of a sudden, everything you're used to working with in terms of how an 18mm appears and what kind of perspective it gets, etc., will now change, and because you no longer get the same magnification from the lens in terms of its, you know, relative magnification to 35mm that you will get. The moment you put, you know, the 85mm on your EOS 5D, if that's what you do, again, you'll notice that it wouldn't magnify as much if indeed the same focal length lens was put on a 350D. So there will be a bit of a difference. If you like the camera and if it works better for you, then I would say yes, it may enable you to actually take better photographs, because it's a tool and tools are important for how our work turns out. You know, a carpenter will buy a certain saw and hammer and chisel because, and he will buy one brand over another because it feels better to him. Those things are important in photography, but they're not the be-all and end-all. There's a fair bit of money involved in your upgrade, Si Young, and I hope that, you know, that's something that you'll consider in the balance between whether it will actually help you take better photographs or, you know, and the difference in that money. It's a very difficult question for me to answer. Thank you for sending the photographs through. It seems to me that, you know, what you are doing already is quite good, and, you know, your learning process as a result of this podcast and no doubt other processes you're going through will help you. The EOS 5D Canon is a fabulous and very professional camera, so you couldn't go wrong with it. And you'd know from listening to my podcast, if you've got an 85mm 1.8 and you like photographing, you know, things with minimal depth of field, you can't go wrong with that either. The other two lenses, the 24-70 2.8 and the 70-200 f4, will work fabulous. With those three lenses, there'd be very little you couldn't photograph. The only thing I'd suggest would be maybe you'd need something wider, eventually, but you're doing pretty well there. Have a look at it, see how it feels in your hand, and you know, whether you can balance it off with the expense. But I would never say that the cameras take better pictures, because as we know, people take pictures, but they are important in how we feel about our photography and how we work with our tools. See if that helps you, Si Young, and I hope that you come back to us with your answer, because I'd like to know exactly what you've done. It would be interesting to see if there is a difference if you do upgrade to the 5D, whether it does affect your photography at all. And keep us posted on that front, and thank you for sending that through. That's very much appreciated. Mm-hmm. And we're also getting emails from people letting us know that they've received their GorillaPods.
Yep.
And so we're going to have some ideas over the next few weeks for how to use your GorillaPod. Just some interesting things, aren't we, Bruce?
Absolutely.
So stay tuned, because they're a great little accessory, and we're glad to know that you are finally getting them. And thank you very much to Joby for organizing that for us.
Absolutely. Thanks again to the guys at Film and Video Extras in Melbourne for kickstarting that too.
Absolutely. Yep, that was terrific. That was really terrific. Now, I suppose we should get on to finishing off the very thing that we've been talking about, and that is light. Nice to know that from what you've said, Carl, who sent us an email. He says, thanks for picking up the lighting subject and running with it. Hopefully I'm learning something. I'm also still loving the Fuji S5, which we talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast. Mm-hmm. The D200 has now been demoted to a backup body. Well, I never intended that, Carl. And I personally would disagree with you on that front. But, I love my D200 and still love the images out of it, buddy. But hey, you know, we've been talking about what feels good for you. So that's terrific.
So is that why you wouldn't agree? Simply a feel of it in your hands?
Well, they're essentially the same camera, but...
Because you were very complimentary about the quality of the images out of the S5.
And I still am. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The S5 just pulls out some fabulous images. In retrospect, I mean, I have the D200 now, and I've done my own comparisons, and I'm very happy with it. I would happily have an S5, a Fuji yeah. S5. It's a little slower than the D200, right. And they still haven't sort of ironed out some of the clunkiness of the software that the Fujis have, because, you see, the Nikon have built the D200 from the ground up, whereas right. Fuji have taken the D200 and put their software and their sensors sensor in it. They've done a damn good job. But when you build a camera from the ground up, it's bound to work a little bit better than if you adapt a camera, which is what Fuji have done.
Right.
That is not a negative comment. It's only a comment about the differences between those two cameras. Carl no doubt loves his, and good on you, Carl, for letting us know, because it is an awesome camera. And the images that I saw straight out of it were fabulous. So that's very important. The headshots you've sent us are lovely. So I'm glad that combination of what we're teaching you here about lighting and also your love of the Fuji S5 are coming up with some really
great results.
Really great images. P.S.'s, I noticed, Shelton, you didn't use my surname last time I contacted you. I'm guessing he had problems, that's me, pronouncing it. Well, phonetically, it's Tredjigo. Tredjigo. Okay, all right. Tredjigo. Okay.
Tredjigo?
Carl, get a Smith or a Jones. That'll just make us all really happy, all right? In the meantime, thanks for sending us email. We really appreciated that. What we're going to talk about today is using light to evoke emotion, because it has that quality to it. In fact, if you really consider what we've been talking about using light to reveal shape, form, texture, we are already starting in some ways to talk about things that affect us emotionally, because we can be affected emotionally by a shape. Any man will think of the silhouette of a beautiful young girl. There's a shape that affects us emotionally. Mm-hmm. And the same thing again, form. Things, when we see them, they affect us emotionally. They touch a place in us. And again, let's harken back to form. We see a beautifully lit black and white nude portrait. That's a form. That's what nude photography, high art nude photography, is all about, creating light to highlight, the beautiful angles and shapes and forms of the human body. And that is, and it does evoke an emotional response. And you think of how we would light, say, a baby portrait. That is, and we might be thinking, well, I must reveal the shape, I must reveal the form, I must reveal the texture. But in so doing, we are already appealing to our emotions. It's emotions that draw us into an image, and it's these things that we've been talking about over the past few weeks that have actually been saying to photographers and to those looking at their photographs, draw me in, entice me, because art is really not an academic process so much, it's an emotional process. If we love to look at something, that's an emotional process. We can examine it academically. I listen to music, and I, as a person who plays music, I will love the song. But then on the third or fourth time I've heard it, I'll start to actually analyze it academically. If I wrote the song, then I would have had an emotional connection to it, but I would actually produce it at an academic level. I'd hear the thing and I'd say, okay, well, what I need is, this change of key here, or the introduction of that instrument there, or, that particular sound on the guitar, whatever it might be. So that, we go through an academic process in order to evoke an emotion. And that's really what photography is all about. Every time I listen to Baker Street by Jerry Rafferty, which is, I love that song. I mean, it's as old as the
hills. Greatest sax solos ever.
Oh, fabulous. And More Than a Feeling by Boston. That song took 7 years to write and produce, and it became Song of the Year in 1976. And it's still a fabulous song. But, and I'm mentioning this, and I'll segue into photography in a minute. But if you analyze both those songs, which are classics, they still hold up today in terms of, if it comes on the radio, people still listen. They're not rubbish songs. And it's because the chord structure, not particularly difficult. In both cases, they're fairly straight chord structures. First, fourth, and fifth of the scale with a related minor in the case of the More Than a Feeling song by Boston, with a few other chords thrown in, of course. But that's basically the structure. But it's how he's used the textures, the instruments. He's brought different techniques together, not just one at a time, but the band brought these sounds sounds together and created a song that does evoke an emotion. And it has light and shade. It goes from soft to hard and then back down again and then just builds you to a crescendo, just leaves you there. Fabulous. So does Baker Street with that great sax solo that you said. Now, here's a bit of trivia. Who was the saxophonist? His name was Raul something, if I remember correctly. Oh, okay. But anyway, that's another story. If you know and you're listening, hey, email me. is Raul something went off into some news. But anyway, if you analyze music, the songs that you like, your pieces of music, they could be orchestral or they could be pop songs like we've just talked about. They have elements to them that combine to evoke an emotion. Photography is exactly the same. We've talked about using light to reveal aspects of the subject that, you know, draw us in. And it's the revealing of the subject that does draw you in to make you connect with it at an emotional level. So combining...
Raphael Ravenscroft.
What was his name?
Raphael Ravenscroft.
Raphael, right. Thank you. You just Googled that, did you, while we were...
Yes.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Went to Wikipedia.
Fabulous. Thank you, Wikipedia. All right. Raphael Ravenscroft, great sax solo. But, you know, there, Jerry Rafferty and Tom Schultz from Boston and all these guys, they obviously know. And if you listen to music that you really like, I'm also a fan of the recently disbanded Creed, who do the same thing, you know, light and shade, hard and soft, and they produce something that makes you connect. We do that with photography, and so that's why I'm suggesting take the things that you've learned so far: light that reveals shape, light that reveals form, light that reveals texture, light that highlights color, etc. And bring as many of those things into the image, as we talked about last time, as possible. Now, of course, we have to understand that the light we use can evoke emotion, or it can negate the emotion that we're trying to convey or achieve. For instance, the color of light evokes emotion. We might not think of light as having different colors, but obviously it does. If you spend a day just standing in the one spot, you'll on a standard sunny day, you'll notice that the color changes as the sun goes through, you know, its journey from one horizon to the other. We start with a warm morning glow, and it might be even a bit softer because it's morning and it's wet and it's dewy and it's misty. And then the sky will become more blue and the colors will become more saturated. The colors will balance out to what we consider, say, more real, more natural, the higher the sun climbs in the sky, but also perhaps the contrast will increase and the shadows will lessen in terms of their direction. Then as the sky moves towards the other horizon in the late afternoon and evening, it warms up again because it's the red part of the spectrum that travels furthest through the atmosphere, and it continues to do so until the sun sets, and then, as we know, it'll just cool off and become night. So color, light does have color. And as we know, colors are related to emotions. We talk about having the blues. We talk about being green with envy, hot with anger, you know, red with embarrassment or red face. We use colors to talk about feelings. Well, colors do relate directly to our feelings. And even restaurants will use different color schemes to get people to eat more. There's a psychology to color that is used in business to get people to buy, to shop, you know, and so therefore we should understand the psychology of color in our photographs. Not only the tone of the color, the nature of the color, but it's the level of its saturation and also the color with which it's contrasted. So we should try to cleverly use color to suggest emotions. Warm, if we want a romantic portrait, we would probably prefer to do that in the late afternoon, wouldn't we, when the light is warm and soft and we can use the color of it and the nature of it to both rim light and warm up the issue, warm up the image. Warmth, you know, conveys the idea of romance, comfort, softness, love. On the other hand, cold blue light. There's been a tendency in movies to actually use blue filters. I don't know whether you've noticed that yourself, Bruce, but where they want to convey something that is stark, uncomfortable, cold, unfriendly, unfeeling. If they want to convey that kind of an atmosphere, you'll notice that they've either digitally manipulated the image to just cool it up a little bit, or they've actually used Rattan filters or the like to have a bluish cast. Look for that. If you're listening, look for that in movies. There's something that I've noticed in a lot of movies and TV productions where they actually deliberately blue, you know, add a shade of blue as a filter over the lens. And it cools up the skin tones and it cools the atmosphere in terms of the color of the light and makes you feel cold and uncomfortable and, oh, I don't want to be here. And so that's a very powerful emotion.
I actually find that there's a bit more of a trend now to move towards a green filter. I don't know if you've noticed that. You look at, not that I'm big into the horror genre, but you look at some of the horror movies that are coming out and they tend towards a sort of a green tint to the light. And they did the same in The Matrix.
Yes.
Exactly the same sort of thing.
Yes, true.
But same concept, though.
Yes, absolutely. And if you think of green in terms of, say, horror, if there's a greenness to a skin tone, well, it makes you feel like
you know, they're sick.
They're sick, they're unwell, there's something wrong. It makes you feel uncomfortable because we know that is not a color. There's something subconsciously happening in our psyche that's saying, well, hang on, that I mean, we're not consciously telling ourselves unless we're actually studying it, and, you know, but there's something in the back of us that says, oh yeah, that's a bit weird, that's not right, and it makes us feel a little oogie, you know. and if we use the reverse of that and we say we'd use a warming filter to enhance a skin tone, or perhaps, you know, warm it in the camera by changing the color temperature, those and those kinds of things are very powerful to convey an emotion. And let's say this, that changing the color temperature setting in your camera, even if you know, dial in a number for a particular setting to change the nature of the color is very powerful. And I would suggest, if you've got a digital camera, go out and take a landscape photo at different color temperature settings. Just put it on a tripod, take the same photo 4 or 5 times at different color temperature settings, then do the same with a person in that landscape and just sort of fill the frame with a little more with that person and change the color temperature settings. Now you've got the same photograph, the same setting, you would take them only seconds apart. And I'll tell you what, every single one of them will give you a different feeling. Not only will the colors be unnatural, but where there are only slight variations, or one perhaps might be natural, and, you know, like you might have your balance, your white balance set up perfectly for the conditions, and then you might alter it slightly towards the warmer or the cooler side of light. But so it's not a drastic change, but you will notice a difference in how you feel looking at that portrait. Say, particularly if you've taken a portrait in warm afternoon light, cool it off a little and then see how you feel about that, whether you still feel as connected to the person, whether you still feel like you want to go up and hug them or not. I mean, that's really what color does, and we can alter the mood of an image simply by altering how we've allowed the color to filter through, or by the light we've put our subject in. So think of in terms of how color, the color of the light we're using, or the color that we actually turn the light into, will affect how the image appears. That is why, like I said, a lot of wedding photography, you know, is done in the afternoon in a warmer light. And if you haven't got warm light, then you have to change the way sometimes you photograph things. We will often turn up on a scene, a landscape, for instance, or to do a portrait or whatever, and the light that we've imagined, the photograph we'd imagined, just isn't happening because perhaps we haven't noticed it, but the color of the light is incongruent with the emotion that we want the photograph to evoke. If that's the case, there's not a heck of a lot you can often do about it. So there you have to change how you make that portrait, or how you, you know, take that landscape. You will need to rely on other things so that, you know, the photograph works so that the subject and the light and the way you've, you know, established the image will have to all be congruent. If there's incongruencies, that's fine, but only if that's what you intend. The thing we have to understand is that light has a variety of characteristics at any given time. And with the techniques we've discussed over the last few weeks, if you combine them and use them for greater impact, your photographs will assume much more dynamics and have greater impact upon you in terms of how you feel about them and the sense of achievement you derive, and also how they affect others. If you study lighting techniques in studios, that's a great thing to do. It teaches you so much about how light can be created and how it can be used. Learning to use available light and lighting equipment effectively really is a large key that will open up doors to very successful and dynamic images. So that's the last of our sessions on light, Bruce. Mm-hmm. No doubt we'll be talking a lot about light in the future, but this is our mini series has come to an end, yep. May I say.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. I hope everybody's benefited from it. And of course, now it will be time for, we can come up with something, but now it's time for emails from listeners to say, hey, that was great, but what about this? Can we talk about this at some stage?
Yeah,
we've got
absolutely.
A couple to catch up on, but always appreciate your suggestions and input. Thank you very much.
Definitely.
Now, we didn't do a podcast last week, so I think no. We should apologize to everybody, but you and I were just too flat out to fit it in.
We were.
So we hope...
I put up a little message to explain that we had not been able to hook up, so...
I know, but we should apologize and tell... We missed you, everybody, all right? We missed you
absolutely.
Very much. Hope you missed us.
Yeah. All right, mate. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
And we'll talk with you again next week.
Look forward to it.
All right, mate.
Thanks, mate. See ya.
See ya.
Now... How much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.